Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning for our Saturday morning Bible study on a most important topic. Today is December 21st, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all. And today our moderator is Shardell from Pennsylvania.
Good morning. I'll start by reading. Is there an echo? Are we okay?
No echo on our side.
Okay, good.
We hear you just fine.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'll start by reading from Watches, Prayers, and Arguments by Mary Baker Eddy. I thank you, dear one, for your kind remembrance of me, the most loved and perhaps the most loved and hated of earth. May you watch and pray that you keep the commandments and live the Sermon on the Mount this coming year. Watch, too, that you keep the commandments that experience has compelled to be written for your guidance and the safety of Christian Science in our church manual. Lovingly yours, Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, quite appropriate.
Yeah, perfect.
Pretty graphic, loved and hated.
Yeah.
And you've devoted yourself to God. You set yourself apart. You gain the respect and love and admiration for those who see what you're doing and how good it is. There are some that don't see it, however.
Yeah, and it's not like there are gray zones. When you live a Christ-like life, people see it as either right or wrong.
And there's a reason why it was written. That experience has compelled, strong word.
Yeah, the church manual, commandments. It's a great way to look at it.
It is.
It wasn't written by Mary Baker Eddy as a personal recommendation. She wrote it because God told her to. And no wonder there seems to be not much healing in the organization, because the leadership of the organization has violated the commandments in the manual. So much.
Yeah, and I'm encouraging everyone to read Cradle Obscurity. It's a article by Sybil Wilbur, or a long article, short story. Jeremy's posted it. Joanne reminded me of it and sent it to me. It had been rattling around in my head about a reporter who had to really work hard in order to gain audience with Mrs. Eddy. And it is this story, and it is a beautiful story, and it's very timely right now because of how the reporters of her day were maligning her, as she writes here, loved and hated. And she put this Sybil Wilbur through many tests before she allowed her to come into her presence and eventually to write this beautiful, beautiful story, Cradled Obscurity, and then also a biography about Mrs. Eddy. And I think maybe it was the first written by one who was not a Christian Scientist, and she defended our leader in a beautiful way. It's a beautiful story and so prevalent for right now with all talk about fake news and fake media. What they were saying about her was just atrocious. And it's just so beautiful. Everyone should read it, Cradled Obscurity. And thank you, Joe, very much.
And I think it's also worth discussing why was she one of the most hated? What happened to Jesus when he was in the presence of materially minded people?
They hated him.
They were uncomfortable around him in his presence. Mrs. Eddy explains this in Science and Health. They didn't understand the reason for their discomfort. They didn't realize that it was the materialism within themselves that was being burned out by the Christliness of Jesus' presence. They didn't understand that, so they didn't go into themselves and change themselves. They thought it was Jesus' fault that they were uncomfortable. And in order to justify themselves, they had to hate Jesus. There was something wrong with him that caused their discomfort. So it was with Mrs. Eddy. There were people in her presence who were very uncomfortable and they didn't understand why. So they thought it had to be her fault. So they hated her.
And tried to destroy her and of course, destroy Jesus as well. And I read last week when she moved to Chestnut Hill, she said she was being, taken up by the enemy. If she ever left Pleasant View. And so she was. She did not live much longer after that. So the human mind will always, it's the Antichrist. That's why it's rampant right now. That's why many of you feel it right now. Because it's along with Christmas and the great blessing and the observing it in quietude. There are also those who are observing it in materiality. So the Antichrist gets active at this time of year, and we have to even bow more humbly before the Christ and let those arrows shoot over our heads and not get hit by any of them, because it will try. You'll start to feel depressed. You'll be angry with family members. You're going to feel super pressured, tired, and you stop and go into your closet and get your peace, as was read beautifully on Wednesday. Anybody else?
Well, before we go on, if you're interested, Linda helped find the where this reference to the Ten Commandments and the manual is. It's on page 43 under No Adulterating Christian Science. It's very interesting.
Page 43 of what? Of
the manual.
Okay.
88.
Yes, and as most of you know, our next Liberator, that's what it's going to be on the manual. So if any of you find things interesting or want to write an article, we'd be grateful. We've already got some things, right, Carol? Yeah. When Jim, I guess someone from the Mother Church called him, he's still a member there or something, and he asked them outright, I understand you're changing the manual. Whoever he spoke to denied it, but according to Hartsook's newsletter, they are working on it. Well, they've already changed it because they haven't interpreted it correctly by not obeying the estoppel clauses. So, and also in the change, where did I read somewhere? Someone was saying that one small change was satanic, making the churches no longer were independent. I've been reading so much lately, but I thought, wow. And look what it's led to. So, yeah, one small change did a great deal of damage. Plus, of course, the disobeying the estoppel clauses. And people who call and want help and think, I don't want to hear about any of that. That's just politics. It's not just politics. It's very important to understand the history of our church if you want a real healing in Christian Science.
And to respect that the manual was written out of inspiration. God directed Mrs. Eddy to write it. It's no less divine than the textbook or the Ten Commandments or the Beatitudes in the Bible.
There's one article that we have in the Liberator, and it says that the manual is as healing as science and health is, because not disease unlawful? Is it not disobeying a law? If we obey the manual, we're safe.
It's beautiful. Thank you very much. That's why it's not politics. That's why it has to be obeyed and understood, and our independence needs to be understood. Why we write our own lessons and do the things we do. There's a reason. It's not just...
It wasn't our idea.
It wasn't.
It was God-directed.
And I've only been here like 6.5 years, so I've had to learn all this stuff and think about it. And I think about Jesus saying, this may not be exact, but I am the vine and ye are the branches. And by them trying to hold that center, they're saying they're the vine, you know. And I don't know, to me, that's what strikes me about it. They always want to usurp the position
of God.
Mm-hmm. Christ.
Exactly.
If you're going to be a vine that any branches will keep growing on, you got to be holy then.
Yes.
Because no branches will keep growing on that unholy vine.
Well, and to have the humility to recognize that we are branches and that God is the vine, the Christ is the vine. And for the directors of the Mother Church to think that they are the center, and everybody else is a branch, there's a lack of humility. They are as much a branch as any other branch, and God is the center of Mother's Church.
Anytime any of the local churches, they were independent. And any time that they asked Mrs. Eddy for advice, she would tell them, read the book. She never wanted to interfere with the doings of each individual church. And then the board of directors went and reversed it all.
Yeah. Yeah, because you create weaklings if you have... people have to demonstrate and learn from their mistakes if need be. Otherwise, everyone's just weaklings if you're always just turning to someone to tell you what to do. And that usually leads to a lot of resentment, too, especially if what they tell you to do doesn't work out, which usually it doesn't.
And you're looking to person instead of to God for your answers. And that's it. Very bad.
Very bad.
It's the same error of wanting a king that the Israelites went through.
Right.
Everybody. The nature of the human mind, he wants to seek out who and what's in control. Looks every place except to God.
Okay, we should move on, I think.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. We're going to be working on the 10th commandment. And it reads as this. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is in thy neighbor's house, in thy neighbor's.
Something that came to mind, I was looking at it's titled Spiritual Interpretation of the Ten Commandments, by Mrs. Eddy. I think it's out of the blue book. On number 10, it says fulfillment. Love gives us all things. And then the next thing I thought about was Psalm 23, where it says, I shall not want. And, if, you know, love gives us everything. We don't want for anything. And we don't need to want stuff either. We are content and satisfied and fulfilled with what we have.
And where was that quote?
No, we have it.
The fulfillment, love gives us all things.
Yeah.
It said from Divinity Course in General Collectania, the Blue Book by Mary Baker Eddy, pages 232 to 233.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The Blue Book. Okay. Lauren?
That's right, the Blue Book.
Got it all.
That must be Florence's favorite book, or second favorite.
If you see the stickers, you will know it is.
Yeah. When you see her book, you'll know it is. Did you want to say something, Florence?
No, I think that sums it up really. When we know, but we got to know what we have in order to know we really should be satisfied. I think when through false education, of course, you're taught you know. You should be this before you're okay, or you're tricked into looking at people, what they have, and think that's happiness and stuff like that. That kind of confuses us and deceives us into thinking that unless we have certain things, we can't be satisfied. It's just false education, partly.
Yeah, you see it all the time with this advertising that you have to have this, you have to have that. Again, that's rampant, especially now, but it's throughout the year. Goodness, I used to have one very small closet. You didn't have 10 sweaters. You had one sweater. That was it. Maybe two. But it's consumerism. Bruce, what did you want to say?
Well, to learn to be content is an enormous growth in grace. And gratitude, of course, is an enormous antidote to all the discontent that's pushed on people through the media and society generally. And so I can't emphasize enough how important gratitude is. There's no reason for us to be discontented about anything. God is with us. He is ours, we are his, and the application of this is infinite. So we have every reason to be happy and content and grateful. It's the number one antidote to all this discontent, especially all this advertising. You know, I've seen it with kids that turn on the TV and watch the commercials. And before the commercial started, they were perfectly happy. And after the commercial, they weren't happy because they had to have that thing that was put before them. Well, what changed during the presentation of that commercial? It was artificially induced. This discontent.
What it boils down to is that you're walking in the spirit and not fulfilling the lusts of the flesh.
It boils down to, thank you.
And I was thinking, God knows exactly what you need. If you have 6 children, well, you need more than 1 bedroom house. But somebody that's by themselves, why would they need a 6 bedroom house? God knows exactly what you need, and he provides it, and it's available for everybody.
And sometimes he knows that you need to learn that you don't need it.
That's right. And all this, you know, going into debt, people charging their credit cards. It used to not be that way. You didn't go into debt. And we should not go into debt. If you don't have enough, you shouldn't get it, period. But you see, that's coveting, because you don't have enough, but everybody else has so much, so you want to have whatever they have. And if you have to overcharge your credit card, well, so be it. But you don't have to. Living simply is not the worst thing in the world. Most people who start out have to live simply. It's a good lesson. Who was saying, oh, you were telling me how parents buy their children houses, right?
Yeah, I've heard of parents buying their kids houses and all kinds of stuff when they get married. And I don't know, to me, I think part of the I don't know if the word's charm, but you know, part of your 20s is just learning to move forward. And as you gain each step, you really appreciate it. So, and Mary Baker Eddy, her spiritual precepts, Gilbert Carpenter wrote, another way to express the precept not to run into debt is never permit effect to get ahead of cause in your estimation. If you keep a surplus of divine mind on hand, you will have the expression of all your needs. But the attempt to obtain effect apart from cause is running into debt.
That's beautiful. Where is that from?
Precepts.
Precepts. What page? What one?
Volume.
I'm not sure. I got it off the PDF. I can find it, though, and let you know.
Thank you. Yeah, when Gary and I were first married, we lived in a one-room apartment.
A studio apartment.
Yeah, you pulled out the couch. And that was our bed. And on the bed, you could turn on the television. You could open the closet door. The room was so tiny. And our kitchen was minuscule. And we had a card table in the hallway.
That was our dining room table.
And when we had people over, one of the people had to sit in the bathroom. But anyway, you know, it was fun, right? I mean, that's what Jeremy was saying. It was all we had, and we were happy for it.
When you mentioned learning to appreciate things, that's an enormous skill. I think we can all tell stories about some guy who has everything that could possibly want and yet is still unhappy. The reason being is he never found the source of happiness, which is God, of course.
Thank you. I know. I was telling someone yesterday to read the book Ecclesiastes. You can have everything, but if you don't have God, it's all vanity and vexation of spirit. So when you look longingly at someone else and think they have everything and you don't know. And if they don't have God, they don't have anything. And usually anything worthwhile has been very well earned through blood, sweat, and tears. And I'm sure most of you understand that. It doesn't just come. If it's something of God, it's earned. And it's always good to earn things, just as was said, because then you appreciate them. Mrs. Eddy says, ingratitude is the one unpardonable sin, and its remedy, and its only remedy, is gratitude. And when you're coveting, you are not grateful, and you are putting yourself in a really bad spot. And what else about this commandment, Bruce?
Well, this commandment tells us to examine thought, because it doesn't make any references to the things that you do outwardly. As you all know, all of the deeds are the result of thought. Nothing's done unless it exists in thought first. And we know all about these so-called moral people that said, I never did this and that and whatever, but never examined their thinking. And therefore, they're not so moral as they think, because this commandment tells us to examine thought. You know,
the desires of thine heart.
And Jesus explains this very well in the Beatitudes,
yeah,
in the Sermon on the Mount.
Mm-hmm. And elsewhere as well.
Elsewhere.
You know, the good man that came to him, what do I need to do to obtain eternal life? Well, you know the commandments, don't steal, commit adultery, honor your father, don't bear false witness. All these things I've done from my youth up, I did them all. But then he had a few other things to challenge him, like the things that he cherished most, his physical possessions. So he wasn't quite so good as he thought he was. You know, obeying this commandment is a come-to-your-maker moment. You know, if you do things, you can't hide it from other people. But if you think something, you might be able to get away with hiding it from other people, but you can't hide it from God. You know, the impulses of the heart.
And you can't avoid the consequences of keeping it in your heart.
Exactly.
In Matthew, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. You have heard it was said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart." And it's very interesting because in the Jewish views, in the Torah, it said, even if the covetous desire is concealed in the heart, the covetous desire in itself is regarded by the Torah as damaging to the neighbor. You know, we are mental, and if someone is mentally raping you, you're going to know it. And if you don't know it, you're going to feel weird, or you'll feel something. You can't do this and think you're getting away with it. You think you can think those thoughts in your house and it's not going to affect your children, for instance? There's a price to let your thought wander in that respect. And I will say, in talking to Parthens, I mean, he tells me very interesting things. And in some ways, I've seen this in the practice too. Well, he says that this child pornography stuff, even if a child has not been physically abused, if he is looked on and lusted on by some creep, that does something to that innocent thought. Is that not true? Do you think you can get away with this?
No.
No. And so maybe nobody knows, and maybe we're not quite sure what's going on, or the child is suffering in some way, or a person is suffering in some way. So try the spirits and ask God what's going on. And that's why I tell most people, especially people who've had a problem in this regard, to memorize and work with Mrs. Eddy's definition of angels in Science and Health, with which Jeremy will read to us, because it's very important. We are mental. You don't get away with it. And so Parthens was making that point very clearly, especially because he especially loves the children. You know, you have to guard and watch over your children, all children. Go ahead.
Page 581 of Science and Health. Angels. God's thoughts passing to man. Spiritual intuitions, pure and perfect. The inspiration of goodness, purity, and immortality. Counteracting all evil, sensuality, and mortality.
It's a perfect protection. We've been taught here to work with it, and work with it often.
And instead of coveting, you should desire to help others preserve what God has given them.
Thank you very much. That's the antidote to it. Instead of coveting is all about self, it's godless. And I don't care if you have a reason to covet. I mean, we all could have reasons to covet if you look for them.
But this idea of being satisfied with what God has given you, and this idea of turning to God for your needs, for your desires, turning to God alone, will help prevent you from breaking the law. It'll keep you from stealing, lying.
I think in a way,
it will. And Mrs. Eddy says, a moral man will not worry about whether he's a murderer or not, because he knows he's not. He can't. Well, you can't break the other commandments either if you don't covet.
There was a definition in Webster's on content, and I found it interesting. To satisfy the mind, to make quiet so as to stop complaint or opposition. And I think then you think about the gratitude that Bruce brought up and how that also is very important. And I just thought the quietness so as to stop complaint or opposition. Because when we're coveting, we're not very quiet. We're all agitated.
That's an honest statement.
Well, that's right. But whether we show it outwardly or not, mentally, we're agitated. It is an unnatural state. It's an unlawful state. It's an illegitimate state. And it's not going to do you any good.
What happened to King David?
Oh, we saw that Bathsheba, is her name? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coveted her and then sent her husband to go die in war.
And he had been a good man doing what he... Doing a lot of wonderful, good things. Good king. And then he got home. You know, he got home from war. Maybe he's a little bored. Boredom is a terrible thing. Boredom can lead to all kinds of things when you don't have constructive work to do. So he's, you know, looking out his window at something he shouldn't be. I don't know what she was doing, being outside his window, but that's probably another story.
And he was taking a bath.
Well, she was. She was taking a bath out there.
In those days, I think that they had that outside places to take a bath. I mean, but innocently, she was, I think. I mean,
yeah.
He had no business standing up there looking down.
No, he had no business doing that. Nope.
But I also think that in this coveting thing, that it has to start with a sense of lack. I don't have something. I'm not satisfied, obviously. And then the thought goes into, well, here is something. I must have this to be happy. In a way, it really denies God's wholeness too, because if you know that we are God's expression and you're not separating yourself from Him, then we know that in truth we have everything. So it breaks the first commandment too.
Yes. Yes. And the covetousness, as someone mentioned, I mean, you covet, that can lead to stealing, can lead to murder. You start breaking all those commandments. And just get back to David, what happened to him? He got Bathsheba, but then what happened? Bruce, what happened?
I think they had a son and he died, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Had
Thanks
a son.
For bailing me out.
Well, sometimes we had a Bible study about it. So.
After the Bible study, Bruce will tell me all these things he's going to say. So I'm just going to keep calling on him. So he gets it all out.
I think it was through Bathsheba they had the son Solomon. You know what his ultimate outcome was? How many thousands of strange women.
Yeah, eventually he came.
He didn't have a good end.
No. No, and his first child with Bathsheba died, and David was giving a sound rebuke from the prophet Nathan as to what he had done. And David, instead of carrying on and on and on, he repented. He didn't argue about it. He knew he was real guilty, very guilty. And so he repented, and then he didn't spend the rest of his life mourning over his mistake. He changed his ways, and I don't think that ever happened again. Thank God. But But you see, that's why when children die or these weird things go on in people's family, you don't know what's being concealed, really being concealed. That's why you've got to get this stuff out in the light of day to be healed. Because sometimes people are carrying all kinds of, they're doing things they know they shouldn't be. And it will affect somebody, whether you talk about it or not, getting back to my other point. So you don't get away with it. And David certainly didn't. And he prayed and prayed and prayed that that child would be spared, but he was not.
Well, Mary Baker Eddy warns about, well, she lumps covetousness in with a lot of bad things. In miscellaneous writing, she says, evil was and is the illusion of breaking the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. It is either idolizing something and somebody or hating them. It is a spirit of idolatry, envy, jealousy, covetousness, superstition, lust, hypocrisy, witchcraft. And then she says also in the new birth, evil thinking or envy, evil thinking, evil speaking, covetousness, lust, hatred, malice, are always wrong and will break the rule of Christian Science and prevent its demonstration.
Wow, thank you very much. Will prevent its demonstration. You're not having a demonstration? Maybe you better look within.
Yeah, check envy, jealousy.
Yes.
And because if you're lusting or coveting after something, your consciousness is in the wrong place. You're actually blocking the receptivity to what God would otherwise have for you. You're blocking the angel thoughts.
Yeah, that's the ironic part of it. While you're doing that, you are blocking all the good that God would have for you. While you're wanting something you shouldn't have, you're envying someone else's demonstration. And you know, you've seen this, haven't you? Seen it when, someone, a married couple, the wife or husband gets involved with somebody else. Can often ruin a family. How hard it is for the children. It creates an utter mess, perdition it can. And then, it doesn't stop there. Usually if the other person runs off with someone, that relationship isn't happy. How could it be? It's based on something that's wrong. This is very, very serious stuff we're talking about. These commandments are not to be fooled around with. They are commandments for a reason. I've been told they're not suggestions, they're commandments. If you obey them, you will have a happy, peaceful life for the most part. And if you don't, there'll be one tragedy, misfortune after the next. And, you know, this also, it applies to people, but it also applies to nations, doesn't it?
Sure does.
In what ways? Why do people go to war?
Because somebody has gold and I want it. And I will take it.
Very, very often, right. Yes.
Because they want what the nation has.
They want to conquer everybody, take it all. Or that country has great oil fields. Or. Mm-hmm. Says Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. And that's a interpretation of 1 Timothy. But yes, it leads to wars, it leads to divisions in government, it leads to all kinds of things.
It will lead to bad laws.
In what way?
It will lead to taxes that are totally unnecessary and not useful to society.
Yeah.
When you have people in society who want what other people have, they will vote for politicians who will steal from those who have to give to those who have not. This is not political. This is proper governance.
It's also biblical, and you are depriving those people from learning what Lawrence eloquently said earlier about our source of all everything, all our supply, everything is in God. And everyone has to come to that, and everyone can come to that. And everyone should come to that, because that is truly what will make you happy and content, rather than coveting what someone else has or thinking, you know, that they're to blame that for your misfortunes. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And even if that were true, and say it is true, all that thought's not going to help you get out of your situation. God is your helper. It doesn't matter what other people have done. It doesn't even matter about the injustices. Don't we see that over and over and over in these Bible stories? I mean, look how badly Joseph was treated. Even by his own brothers. I mean, most of these are terrible injustices that we're talking about. But if they spend all their time just being angry at the injustice and I'm going to get back at those people, well, they would never have gotten out of the problem, would they? It says,
and I don't think
one of the commentaries, God has expressed his abhorrence of Israel's covetousness and warned of its ultimate outcome. Quote, they covet fields and take them by violence, also houses and seize them. So they oppress a man in his house, a man in his inheritance. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, against this family I am devising disaster from which you cannot remove your necks. That's in Micah. And then it says, one glaring example of the almost universal acceptance of covetousness is the burgeoning popularity of government-run lotteries. Millions of people surrender part of their paychecks each week, hoping to win a fantasy life of ease and luxury. Likewise, the gambling meccas of the world are hugely popular vacation resorts, specializing in entertainment, appealing to our baser instincts. Promoting covetousness is a big business. It's promoted. That's why you have to be so well grounded. I mean, any of these places that gambling casinos, you couldn't pay me to go to one of those places.
You know, I think there have been studies done on people who have won these lotteries, and they end up poorer than they were before. Awful things happen.
They end up very unhappy.
Yeah.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, Chardell. There have been many stories of people who have had
millions upon millions of dollars only to waste it and end up with nothing.
Have you ever heard a story of any of those people doing great good for the world? I haven't, actually. So.
No. And after all, that's the reason for having things in the first place, is to use it for God's glory in some way, instead of simply selfish indulgence. It's a bottomless pit, and it's never content.
And you know, the idea of a rich man's son, what usually happens to them?
They don't do anything with their life. Think they're entitled to everything.
Well, in your example about people buying houses for their children when they get married, that or indulging them in any other way, that is so harmful to our children when we do stuff like that. It is so harmful because it deprives them of the privilege of earning what they have. Everybody needs to have the opportunity to earn what they have.
And you know, just from my perspective, almost nothing feels better than having found my purpose and doing hard work. I love waking up every day and doing what I'm doing. And I would totally want that for everyone.
It's so universal.
It's true. Because
that's what God wants.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, you were going to say something earlier. What was that?
I was going to say that, you know, however means you get whatever you have to matters, because unless God gives it, there is no satisfaction in it. So if it's through some shady ways or unfair ways, it will still not bless. Only what God gives blesses.
And thank you very much. Yeah. And it's also subject to loss. It can be gone in a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only what God gives lasts, and only what God gives blesses. Yes. It's earned, it's demonstrated. And then I know some of you, you know, you've had a car or something that you've just loved because it was a demonstration, we call it. It's a demonstration. You feel like God worked it into your life, and it means so much. A car can be 20 years old. It still means so much. It symbolizes, represents something much more than people who just go through cars and don't really care.
And when you know that God provided it and you're grateful to God for it, it does last forever.
And you'll take very good care of it.
If you're grateful for it.
Yes. And, you know, Jesus commanded his disciples to beware of covetousness, for one's life does not what? Bruce?
Does not consist of the things which he possesseth.
Thank you. It does not. You know, what is that thing? Whoever has the most toys wins or something?
whoever dies with the most toys wins.
I'm not sure I want to win that prize. They might have won
a ticket to hell.
World's biggest idiot.
Well, there are people who are deceived that way. I think eventually they become undeceived one way or another. Maybe not necessarily in this lifetime, but eventually.
Something's got to break that arrogance.
And if you are someone having a sense of covetousness, the only way to get out of it is God. That's a great thing. God is the only one that can deliver you from the carnal mind desires. And he will. And he will put to death. He can put to death those carnal mind desires. And as Lil said at the beginning, the answer to the whole thing is in serving others. mean, coveting is all about you. And also, this is such a important statement that first seek what?
The kingdom of God
and his righteousness.
And
all these things will be added unto you.
Yes. Yes. I guarantee you 100% without a doubt in my mind, if you follow that,
you will be safe
and
cared for.
And all your desires will spend your time. Instead of spending your time seeking things, spend your time seeking God and his righteousness. How to obey him better, how to find the right work in your life, know more of him. Spend your time doing that. And everything else will be added unto you. Everyone is chasing the wrong thing.
And you see, if everybody did that, can you imagine what the world would be like? We wouldn't need human government.
I always feel that must be what the millennium would be, just this explosion of blessings.
Yeah. We wouldn't have wars.
To go along with this, there's a commentator, John W. Rittenbaugh, and he did exactly what you said, Mrs. Singletary, and he said we're not helpless, that God has given us the power to overcome this covetousness. And the first one is seek God first, and then he goes on to hate covetousness, and that's from Proverbs 28. It actually says that.
Yeah.
And then your days will be prolonged. And be a cheerful giver. And then learn thoroughly what grace teaches us. And that's from Titus. So it's out there. We have the ability to do that. We're not helpless.
No, I was reading. Wanting to excel in our life's pursuits can be an appropriate ambition. If being more useful to God and others is our objective, God approves of our gaining the necessary skills and knowledge that bring favor and advancement in this life. As a wise servant of God wrote, Do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. And that's Proverbs. All these things will happen to you, but it's not your objective or your aim. And you'll stop thinking of yourself and thinking of how. I read this beautiful story of this man. Remember I was reading that to you, how? What did he saw that there was a need. Oh, as a young boy, he was 10 years old. He lived by the ocean or something, and he saw the fishermen needed bait. And so he would go. He was 10 years old. He would go and find night crawlers.
Oh, yeah. He asked fishermen how they did, and they said, didn't do well, couldn't find worms. So he started a business. He would dig up worms and open up shop at 6 in the morning, selling worms to the fishermen. And it turned into a huge business because he had what the fishermen needed.
He met a need. Instead of coveting what someone else had and spending all your time doing that, he met a need. And then he excelled, and God gave him everything he needed. It was a humble beginning. I mean, goodness, finding worms. I mean, maybe that's not what you think your life ambition is. But you see, you meet a need, someone else's need, and God prospers it, whatever that need is. He was 10 years old, but I guess later on he expanded that idea and did other things to help people. But he caught a basic biblical principle. You seek your own and another's good. Isn't that what Mrs. Eddy says?
Well, I think that's why a lot of this, the concept of social business, people finding, communities need and then making a business from that, is so successful that the world over right now. All who are doing that is they're doing very well.
And look what happened to you, Jeremy.
I didn't even know I was getting prepared to be here.
I know, I didn't even know.
There was a movie my kids used to watch when they were young, and one of the characters would say, "See a need, fill a need." So I think
that's very simple truth.
Yeah.
And that is what true business is. Bottom line, there isn't anything more complicated than that, the true business. And when God provides you with more than what you need, well, you've got an opportunity to help others.
So all of these answers are the answers to covetousness. I go back to when I was a little girl in this Sunday school right where I'm sitting here right now. And Mrs. Evans was teaching in another class. And she was teaching this commandment. I've given this before. But she said if you were with some friends or something and they were all drawing pictures and you really wanted those pictures, she said, what should you do instead? And I remember, draw your own. And I remember I was leaning over trying to hear, and no one knew the answer. Now it seems obvious because, but at the time, what would you ever do? You wanted someone else's pictures. Well, you make your own. You make your own. Anything else is worse than a bloody waste of time. Because while you're coveting what someone else has, you're missing out on the opportunity.
You could be doing something useful.
Could be doing something useful. So you will suffer the consequences of disobeying this commandment. And your suffering will be well deserved. You can give yourself a gold star for being such a dumb dummy.
Oh, dear. There's a saying that if it's worth having, it's worth working for.
Thank you. Very true. And there's really nothing worse than when you see someone, they call them what, the green-eyed jealousy. You see someone who has truly worked and maybe does have a lovely home, a lovely family, but has really worked for it. And someone comes and wants that and try to destroy it in some way. Seduce the husband or do something. And there's penalties, high penalties for that kind of behavior. Thou shalt not covet.
And as a nation, we need to make sure we are not naive to the fact that there are other nations around the world who covet what we have here in the United States of America.
Thank you.
They would like to take what we have, and they have no concept of how we as a nation have earned it. They have no concept of how God has provided it.
I think all nations can learn from that, though. I really do.
Exactly.
The holy law that we all must obey.
Exactly.
It is, and it is, you know, the fact that we were based on Christian principles. These Christian principles, and our founding father said, unless these Christian principles, the Ten Commandments, Sermon on the Mount, if they are not obeyed, we will lose our freedom. Our country is based on Christian principles. Christian principles.
Which are universal. Principles.
Yes.
They don't exclude anybody. They include everybody.
They encompass everyone. Yes.
I have another thing from precepts on that. If God's gifts are available to all, there is no reason for envy. The one who covets is misled and sees effect as if it were cause. Cause always means freedom. It is an open highway to the one who walks toward it, since it offers limitless progress.
Beautiful. Good. Maybe that's a good ending.
Well, Shadell found something very beautiful, too, from Emma Stewart's Ten Commandments and Beatitudes. It's on page 45 of that little book. I think it's so beautiful. He says, "Be still within the presence of thy God. The poise of soul is true activity. In quietness and confidence, thy strength to human sense shall thus appear to be. There is no object, person, place, or time to worship, serve, or suffer thee to fear. The zeal of that which ever rightly sees perpetuates whatever it holds dear. Thou canst not take God's holy name in vain. Thou livest as the ever-cherished Son, complete and fully satisfied, and dear to him who hath himself all things well done. Thine origin and premise honored is as father, mother, principle sublime. Thus the effulgence of this deathless light as life eternal must forever shine. Excluding, getting, evidencing wrong, adulterating, craving things is not thy history nor thy father's plan, but is the misconceiving of a dream. To love the truth for truth's own sake alone reveals the joy of undivided soul, wherein thy neighbor is thy perfect self, comprises one complete and perfect whole. This Christly edict is the word of God. The law and prophets thereby are fulfilled. Thus greater rule or vision cannot be than love forever witnessing its own." Thank you, Shardell.
Beautiful.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you, that's Shardell. The truth.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thank you all.
Yes.
Thank you, Shardell.
Thank you.
Got to the
thank
end.
You, Shardell.
I'll have to do it again sometime. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.